All right. So, Bill, if you would like to take us off on the official KTR intro.
Welcome to Kelbabe Talk Radio, live from Star Wars Celebration 7, here in Anaheim, California. Thank you. That's it. That's all for me.
So I am your host, Crow, and as you just heard, we just had Tal Greyheed, the voice of KTR every month, with me on this episode. We also have regular cast member Thaxos.
Hello, hello.
And we have guest Solus Ram.
Hey, how's it going?
And we have very special guest John Dak Morton.
He's no good to me dead.
So, yeah, so this is a very special episode for us because it's the first live episode that we've ever done in, like, 5 years?
It's been quite a while
something
now,
like that. Obviously, we're live in front of an audience. Thank you guys for coming, first off. You guys are awesome. And yeah, we're live here at Celebration, of all places to be live at.
We made it.
We made it. All right, I've officially run out of things to say. let's just start in with John. Obviously, you were famed for being Dak Ralter from Empire, also a body double for Boba.
Well, that's actually true. Yeah, the Boba Fett scene I did was on Bespin, where he confronts Vader and tells him that Han Solo is no good to me dead. And I was filling in for 2 days for Jeremy Bullock, who was off doing another film at the time, and as Jeremy and I were about the same size, and I'd worked with a lot of the crew and other films, they said, hey, Morton's a good guy, he'll go do a good job, let's have him fill in for about 2 days, and so Jeremy could go off and do this film. Well, little did I know that Boba Fett was gonna turn out to be this iconic character that he is, and you know, it's been quite a ride, meeting you guys and hanging out with the Mercs, I'll tell you.
So was that, did you actually get to do the He's No Good to Me Dead the first time through, or was that overdubbed, like always?
Always, all of it, yeah. Was overdubbed by Jason Wingren, who did the original.
Mm.
And then right. Tam, you know, he did the recutting.
Mm. So one thing that I've always wondered, because you used to do a fair amount of stunt work in general, and with the Dak role, you got to be blown up. How was that?
Well, actually, that's an IMDb misnomer. I'm not a stunt guy. It's one of those things that's just not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're involved in doing sort of those under 5 line roles in big budget films. You get around to doing a lot of stuff with special effects and what have you. So. I was around little explosive squibs and being squashed and all of that for 5 or 6 films. A Bridge Too Far, Superman 2, Yanks, Empire Strikes Back. And so you got pretty familiar in experiencing all of that. And so you're not actually doing stunts, but when you have a tractor that's a forklift, that is on, you know, with the forks that's above your lunar module and is coming down, banging on top of it, and this thing is crumbling on top of you. That's a one-take scene. And if somehow this guy driving the forklift doesn't really get his act together, he could be crushing the whole thing and you could be history. So that was pretty scary, but the Star Wars part was okay.
Yeah.
Yes. That was just little squibs.
But,
when you cool. got to fill in for Jeremy, you got to wear the armor?
Yeah, I was wearing Jeremy's outfit.
How was that experience for you?
It was okay, and it wasn't as heavy as people think it was. The only thing that was really odd, and I've said this many times before, was the actual blaster. His weapon was not balanced very well. So anybody that's carried a weapon and knows about, you know, pieces, this thing, you know, would not have been a good piece to shoot with. it would have been tricky. So I was aware of that because as they were shooting the scenes, it took, you know, several hours, you know, they were doing the reversals and what have you. So you were holding on to this. And I can't honestly remember whether it was my right arm or left arm that was just, you know, exhausted by the end of the day. But not both. So I just remember it was just not a well-balanced piece.
At what point did you really realize that Boba Fett was going to become such an iconic character, and how did that feel to be part of that legacy?
It was really once the film was out.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware really what his storyline was at all. And as you probably know from reading about Empire and a lot of filmmaking, is that you never, unless you're Mark Hamill in every scene, you don't see the whole script. You see what are called sides,
right,
which are your sheets where you've got your spoken lines. And so I had no idea anything about who this guy was. I just knew he had a scene with Darth Vader. But subsequently, I'm delighted to find out, as I said to the panel that I was attending recently, I said, hey, how many people do you know played a character that faced down Darth Vader?
Well,
that's right. I think there's maybe one, and it was Boba Fett, and I had the pleasure of that scene. He's no good to me dead. that was kind of spitting in Vader's eye, don't you think?
Definitely. Lately, you've been one of the panels that you just did today. You're involved with military affairs and like military relations and veterans relations with the various costume clubs. Like, what's the can't think of a better
connection?
Way to say it. But what's the connection with that?
Well, as I do about 10 appearances a year around the country and over in the UK. And what was very evident was I was running into people, men and women, who were in the costuming organizations and just Star Wars fans, who were in law enforcement, who were firefighters, EMTs, and in the military. And they all had a story to tell, and one of them is here. It was the guy that inducted me into the Mandalorian Mercs, Daryl Vincent, pointing to himself there.
Right over there.
And he's the CEO of the Blue Moon Clan, and he had a story to tell about his passion for the Mercs and how it was something that was very important to him after he came back from service in Afghanistan. So, what I do with my day job, we come from a military family. Almost all of my cousins and my father and grandfather and my daughter serve in the Navy, one of my daughters. And I make my living nowadays in Washington, D.C. as a consultant to the Naval Sea Systems Command, and also I did a lot of work in Homeland Security. So I had the happy coincidence of finding, not that I expected it, but what would happen is that, hey, I'm merging these two parts of my life that are quite distinct when you sort of think about it glancingly. But then suddenly I'm finding, wait a minute, these two worlds are intersecting. And other people are telling me that they're intersecting as well. And so I pitched the idea for this panel to Mary Franklin, and Mary being an adventurous type, I don't know if anybody knows her that's here, but she's one of the coolest people you could ever meet. She
Definitely.
Accepted the idea, and so I was able to populate it with some of my buddies and some of the folks here at the California, Southern Cal Garrison. We put together a really good team. It's a good panel.
Excellent.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We know Mary. Mary's done a ton for the Mercs.
Yeah.
We're a little sad to see her, that she was stepping down from Lucasfilm, but it's a good thing for Reed Pop that she's going on with them. That'll be a really good thing.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to affect the way everybody's doing business around here, but the first time I met Mary is that she was bartending for a Star Ladies convention in Washington, D.C. in 1997, and she was pretty impressive. So I asked, I said, hey, man, what's your story? And she said, well, I bartend, and I do a little barbering up in Anchorage, Alaska, and also I'm a weight trainer, and that's what I do in the wintertime, but in the summertime, I'm out with the fishing fleets. Did you know this?
Did not know that.
Okay. I said, well, what did you do out in the fishing fleets? And are we talking about dangerous catch and all that kind of stuff? She said, yeah. Well, of course, that wasn't around in those days, but she said, no, I'm a cook on a fishing boat going out of Anchorage. Think about that.
Still, yeah.
Our Mary Franklin was, going out in dangerous catch circumstances, fishing for cod or whatever it was, cooking for all of these guys, and then coming back and cutting their hair on the off season and as a weight trainer. And anybody that knows Mary knows that she's, what's the word, buff?
Yeah.
She's quite something. But she's got a heart for Star Wars. And And it was when I first met Steve Sansweet as well. And the Star Ladies were, and are, were sort of one of the organizations that fed into Club Jade. Do you all know about Club Jade, everybody?
Just heard about Club Jade. We know it was one of the first fan groups.
Yeah, still going. And it's for lady geeks, pridefully so. And you all must have heard of them. They're you know, Star Wars with an attitude. They like to present that anyway. But Sansweet was using them for a focus group to get ideas about, you know, where Star Wars should be going. And a lot of them were writing for West End Games, which was published in the late 90s, a journal of fan fiction, and some of which would go into, you know, eventually be picked up by Del Rey and what have you. And so it was a very interesting gathering. So you had these 30 or 40 women of all ages who were professionals, and they were geeks before the word, I think, was around. And some of them were like attorneys for the Federal Trade Commission and accountants in Chicago and what have you, very interesting folks. And there was Tim Zahn and his wife and his son, and Mike Stackpole, and Mary Franklin was the bartender. So Mary was brought in eventually as a volunteer to assist Steve Sansweet, and then at some point she segued into Star Wars Insider, and I think she was running the Star Wars Insider for a while after John Bradley Snyder, and then got into the fan outreach, kind of following in Steve's footsteps. So here is one example of a career which, at least I can't say that it's going to be the same, you know, with Disney, but it might be. Certainly the signs were pretty good from what was set today by Kathy and JJ. I mean, it's still a collaborative fan-driven enterprise. But at least in those days, people kind of started in Lucasfilm as volunteers. And those that were keen and did a good job, and they, you know, eventually they got jobs and were paid. And Mary's one of those examples.
Yep, very cool.
Okay, so two authors and a Lucasfilm employee walk into a bar, and they hire the bartender.
There you go.
It worked for us.
She's got, she's got the force. It's a wonderful woman.
So you mentioned that you do quite a few conventions.
Yeah.
And with the Man Learn Mercs, part of what we do is the charity, of course.
Yeah.
And that experience has been what got me hooked into all of this. Do you have any great memorable moments from some conventions that you were able to participate in?
On the charity aspects, when I first started attending conventions in the 90s, when I was really moving and shaking in my day job, I always raised money for children's charities. So I'd go to the, you know, when they hired me, I'd say, hey, you know, I'm not taking this, but I want you to pick a children's charity to have a representative next to me who will be taking the money for the charity. So I was able to raise for Make-A-Wish, Children's Cancer Society, Children's Home Society of California, Pediatric Unit in Charlottesville, you know, enterprises like this that are the nonprofits for kids.
That's excellent.
So I did a lot of that for 6 or 7 years, and then I got off the circuit and then came back into it in 2010. Things were a little different for me in Washington, you know, getting up there in ages, you know. You don't know as much when you're getting to be my age, at least in terms of, you know, what people pay for in D.C. So, you know, unless you, you know, head a cabinet department. But so I kind of went back, and I'm not doing the charity work as such now, but what I frequently do is work with the 501st for as a Travis Mannion Foundation, and with the Blaster Stormtrooper events, the monies that they raise go to Travis Mannion, which is a military fund for spouses and dependents of men and women who were killed in action. You know, I support that greatly. So I mean, there's a fair amount of charitable stuff that I do, and inevitably that we all do in Star Wars. But mainly, I think the feelings that I have is, you know, we're here to make a living, but we can do other things, but we're really here to give pleasure to you fans. And so what I take upon myself is to be an ambassador for Star Wars, because Star Wars actually brought me back into things. You know, I was quite happily motoring along memory lane. I was thinking, oh yeah, I did Star Wars for a while. But in 1997, the fan base kind of pulled me into this world. And so I could see, and I think all of us, you know, which were actors in the 1970s, that you all want us to be here. Well, what are we doing here for you? Well, I think what we're doing is trying to hold a mirror back to you all and your enthusiasm and giving everything we can to reinforce that. So I sort of see my role in terms of charities as being kind of a cheerleader. And as I said, you know, the coffee with Kenobi, that doesn't make me shill for Disney. Mm. I'm not shilling for Disney. I'm not on their payroll. But, for example, last night I sort of heard that everybody was hanging out there waiting for tickets to get to see JJ and Kathy. And I said to my daughter, hey, I think we ought to go and work the line. And so I went down there and I just walked right up through the alley for about an hour and shook hands and with people, gave autographs, gave them, had them take pictures if they wanted, and just to, you know, cheer them up. And then lo and behold, well, that's kind of nice, but where it really hit the road was about 15 minutes later, after I had left, the pizzas arrived.
That's right.
So, you know, that's good business for JJ and Kathy to do. And I was delighted by what they had to say, the bits and pieces that I got this morning, is that I really got a sense that Star Wars is about honoring the fans, and it's about giving back, and that's kind of what we reproduced on the panel, and I think that's what you all do in the Mercs and in costuming organizations. In fact, I know that's what you do. I mean, you're there to raise money for kids or for charitable causes, and you're also there, as we heard from the men and women who stood up at the panel, Dar, today, that Star Wars is a family, it's a community, and we're all there edifying each other and kind of, if you're deployed and you run into somebody and you see they got a Jedi patch, you might razz them a little bit if you're a Mando. But on the other hand, you got a common bond. That was a good story. I didn't see it coming that it was this guy.
Yeah. That's excellent.
Yeah. That is. Yeah. Thank you too for working the line. It was very cool. Some of the people I lined up at 9 p.m. last night, so I was one of the people waiting there. So I thought it was really cool, like people like you and I saw.
Did I see you there?
No, I actually didn't. No, I think I might have been asleep. I took a nap on that cold floor for a little bit.
Yeah, but, I saw a lot of you guys.
I heard a couple others came by too.
The only thing I said to people like him is I said, you know, beware the AT-ATs. Well, that's good. Who else came down?
James Arnold Taylor, I heard, was down there. I heard Dave Filoni came down for a little bit. I'm not sure if there were any others. Like I said, I kind of fell asleep during that time.
Good.
But,
good.
Yeah, I don't know. For those of you who don't know, he was talking about the pizza. J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy actually bought pizza for everyone who waited in line last night to get into the panel this morning. So that was really cool. Yeah. Like you said, it's really nice to hear some of the stuff they're saying about, you know, how much they want to include the fans and know it's for the fans and stuff like that. So it's good to hear, especially for us. You know, we're fans who have become sort of other people who encourage fans and pull in fans. Yeah. So it's kind of funny that we're fans ourselves, but at the same time, we're doing the same kind of thing, trying to pull in fans and interact with fans and do the charity stuff. So.
Well, I think it's that give and take. I mean, when the time comes when people don't want, you know, us old geezers to be around anymore, we'll get a sense, and then that, you know, we won't be here. But while we're here and you want to see us, we're gonna say, hey man, you know, keep the torch alive. You know, that's what it's all about. And it is so delightful to see those kind of signals coming from the top.
Yes.
Yeah, from the new leadership.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is so unique about this, to use a terrible term, franchise, which really does come from George Lucas, is that he has kind of created as I've heard it said before, a sandbox, and he's put a few toys in this sandbox that he's welcoming everybody to come and play with. And if you've got your own toy that you want to adapt and put in there, he's saying, okay. And there's a business model that he has, with, you know, he's not being stupid about it, but you know, what he's encouraging people, if you take the geek culture that now is really being, you know, I guess, generated as an extreme positive where people can stand up with pride, as that Navy chief did and said, hey, I'm a geek, you know, and thank you for calling me a geek. You know, what geek is a person, in my mind, who is extremely creative, who is looking for a creative outlet. Some people are geekish in the sense that they want to create a t-shirt, and there is Ashley Eckstein and her universe that wants people like that to come involved and to explore their creativity, and, you know, so that people, you know, Ashley and that individual can make a living, you know, make a buck. There's nothing wrong with making a buck. Other people are writers. Other people are droid builders, like the two guys that they were presented, you know.
Yeah.
You know, other people, who knows, you know, they're costumers. My favorite story, and if I can just elaborate a little bit, and then you can pull out the stage hook, is at the end of the Essen celebration 2 years ago in Germany, a young man came up from Germany and to my table. He was in his mid-30s. That's a young man for me. And he said, I'm really eager to meet you and get your autograph because you mean so much to me, and what you said when, you know, you took off to fight, you said, right now I feel I can take on the Empire all by myself. So I said, okay, it happens when people tell me this. And I said, well, why in particular? And he said, well, I will tell you why. I was studying engineering in university, and I didn't really know what I was doing with my life. And when I saw, you know, that line being said, I thought, yeah, I want to take on the Empire all by myself. And I said, oh, that's pretty cool. So what did you do with it? And he said, well, I'll tell you what I did with it. I went back to my hometown with my degree in chemical engineering, and I was hired by my hometown to work for their waste management facility. Okay, wait for it. And I offered them a design to make the waste management facility better. They accepted it. And they said, hey, this is so neat. We think we want you to manage the facility, which he went ahead and did. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. You made a difference. He said, well, wait a minute. I'm not done yet. And they say, okay, well, what happened next? And he said, well, I'm working on something right now which is going to turn the waste management facility into a power generating station that will enable our treatment facility to contribute for our town of 30,000 people getting off the electricity grid in our section of Germany.
Wow.
He said, and that's why I feel like I'm taking on the Empire all by myself.
That's fantastic.
So here was a guy who was not a droid builder. He was not a t-shirt maker, but, you know, Star Wars did for him something that he's now doing for other people that's making a positive difference. And that's the same with everybody that's part of this, and yeah, we should encourage that.
There's so many different facets to it. It's yeah, fantastic. Well, we don't want to keep up too much of your time. Thank you so much
it's
for coming
great
out.
Being with you.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you, all you Mando Mercs. You look great. What I like about that, you know, is that I'm more attuned to you all than to the 501st with the greatest of respect, because you're all individuals and you're creative. I mean, you know, look at this. You know, you're not seeing a Boba Fett there. You're seeing, you know, you're seeing you. You know,
that's anyway, what we love about
so
it.
So you all are amazing folks, and you know, have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Very nice, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Thanks for coming up.
Watch your ears. Okay, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So I figured the other big thing to happen today, specifically, we've mentioned it a couple times already, the big J.J. Abrams panel that so many people decided to line up yesterday for. Yeah. It was actually, like, I got an email, I'm sure a lot of us got an email, like, about a week or so ago, say, hey, here's what we're doing Thursday. You want to go see this, go stand outside at 6. That's when I decided not to go.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Joe, but that, yeah, not me.
Yeah, originally, see, we,
We kind of planned ahead. A couple of me and a couple of my local guys who were in from Florida. Here, let me pull the mic. There you go. Yeah, we kind of planned ahead to do it. I don't know. We figured flying out here, and we knew there was gonna be a lot of Episode 7 stuff this weekend. So we really, that was the one thing we really wanted to be there for. We knew we had a feeling we'd get the trailer, and yep. They bring the cast out and stuff like that. And so we just decided, hey, we're gonna go for it. So when we got the email saying 6 p.m. on Thursday, we were like, holy cow, that's a lot earlier than we thought we were gonna. Yeah. So we ended up, you know, we had a Merck's meet and greet kind of dinner last night. So we went to that, and then. There was people who would come by the convention center saying there was already a line starting. So we were like, all right, well, if we're going to do this, you know, we better go do it.
Better
so
commit, yeah.
We went back to the hotel and grabbed a couple things and then got in line. We got in line around 9 p.m. And there was already, I'd say there was already close to 1,500 people in line in
wow.
front of us. But the good thing was they had marked the line. They're very organized here so far from what I've seen. They've done a really good job. So they were really organized, though, and they had us marked Celebration stage. So we're like, all right, well, we made the big room, so we're gonna yeah. commit and stay. So we sent a guy back. When we got in there, there was people with air mattresses and lawn chairs and all kinds of, and we're like, okay, so you can bring, so we sent people back for pillows and everything. So we ended up sleeping on a cold floor, you know, getting a couple hours here and there when we could. But it was fun. We had, because I'm like, he, like John said, you know, a couple of the celebs came by and we're just encouraging people and signing autographs, and it was really cool to see that. And then they came by with a megaphone and said that JJ and Kathleen had bought pizza for everyone in line. So that was really cool. I mean, I don't know how many other people can say that JJ Abrams bought him pizza. So
right.
I got that at least, you know.
Well,
that
was, you got us beat there.
Well, that was a hilarious thing I saw on Twitter last night when it happened. I was just like, oh, hey, JJ Abrams bought everybody pizza. And then there's pictures of everybody with the pizza boxes.
Yeah.
But then there are also pictures of people carrying those boxes into the panel
yes.
and never letting them out of their sight.
And I don't know why I didn't think to grab one and be like, hey, this was, the, you know, but there was actually a guy who had written thanks for the pizza and was like waving it in the panel. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, and then, you know, once it got into early morning, they gave us some wristbands around 6 a.m. and then we
right.
still had another 4 hours to wait. So it was a wait, the whole thing. But then once we finally got going, you know, a couple of us were tired and irritated, and we're like, oh, I don't know if this is going to be worth it and all that. And then once we got in there, it was worth every second to me,
yeah.
you know, that we waited. I mean, just the things that Kathleen and JJ said, and then how the setting and the surroundings, and bringing out the cast, the new cast for the first time, the three
yeah.
main characters. And then when they showed the actual trailer, it was incredible. I'm not, I won't lie, I teared up a little bit, especially with the Han and Chewie part, you know. So they dropped the trailer online shortly after, just a couple of minutes after they showed it. So. But yeah, it was. I thought it was worth it. I know a lot of people were told us we were crazy, but it was a blast. So
yeah, I watched the stream comfortably from my hotel room
nice.
This morning. I did miss the trailer because I had to get over here, but yeah, just like everything, just like actually seeing like my favorite part so far, or the my two favorite parts that I saw were J.J. Abrams talking about his daughters, like
yes.
how it's like yeah, like someone asked like oh well how do I'm a filmmaker, how do I get out there and show people my stuff? And he's like, well, everyone has a camera now, so it's that easy. Just do it, put it out there, and great. Like, and then he's like, yeah, and I'm looking at my two little daughters, and they're like putting wipes and effects on their little movies. I'm like, I wish I could have done that when I was 8.
Yeah. Right?
And then the little Rolly droid.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that was definitely
actually,
a highlight. Yeah.
Actually,
BB-8.
Yeah, they rolled a BB-8 out onto the stage.
Yeah,
I actually like
one of the
seeing it move
right?
around.
Yeah,
it's like
I know
like,
there has been like a heated debate between people because Mark Hamill, when the first teaser came out and we saw
yeah.
BB-8, Mark Hamill said he actually drove it on set, and so everyone knew that it moved somehow. It wasn't all CGI, but we weren't sure how it rolled.
Yeah.
There's been, I mean,
oh, yeah.
you know, forum debates on all kinds
yeah.
of tech sites on whether or not this thing could actually roll. So when they actually brought it out on stage today and it was actually rolling, you know, it was really cool. And yeah, they brought out two of the droid builders who
yep.
Mary and JJ said they saw at Celebration Germany.
Right.
Or Essen, you know, Celebration Europe. And so they were two guys who were just there as fans with their droids and got pulled in and asked to build droids for Episode 7. I mean,
that's
the greatest thing
that's
that can
crazy.
Happen to a fan, you know. Here you are as a fan and you get pulled in by Lucasfilm to help with the movie. That's pretty incredible. So
yeah, there's hope for us for Episode 8.
There
yeah.
you go.
Exactly. I thought we couldn't disclose that part.
Let's face it, Thaxos, so you're just right. waiting for the moment.
Just waiting.
Someone
yeah.
comes
yeah.
and eat in cuffs in a minute, you know why. Yeah, it was
God,
a good
if
time.
If you got into a Star Wars movie, we would never be able to live that down.
No.
No.
Oh.
At the very least, I'm hoping we see some familiar designs that make it in.
Yes. Yeah.
Would be cool, at least, as a little nod.
Yeah. Yes. That's like I keep waiting to just see something that looks a lot like that helmet there. Not yours. I don't care about yours.
Oh, yours.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, so not your wife's helmet.
Well, hers would be fine, too. Hers is nice. I mean, if you ever see a movie where someone's got a blown-off rangefinder, that's where it came from.
I'd settle for any Mando merc. Even if it's Star Wars Rebels, I think we have a good chance of... I know, like, Dave Filoni, you know, has admitted in the past that the mercs and other clubs have influenced some of their ideas for the TV shows, so...
Mm.
Who knows? Yeah. Maybe we'll get some more Mandalorians and Star Wars Rebels. That'd be pretty cool.
Given the way things have been going, we've seen a lot more of the Clone Wars released, and they had several seasons in advance worked out at various stages. And I'm hoping we see, at some point, I've heard, I won't say how, there's an entire season that focuses on Boba Fett. We get to see a whole bunch of Mandos, and Boba Fett is a complete and total awesome character, and he's proven he is Boba Fett.
I'm sorry, did you really need to add that in? It's Boba Fett.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it proves that he's Boba Fett, you know, and you know, some people are kind of concerned with how Clone Wars portrays some of the characters, you know, there's no deviation from who Boba Fett is in that. So I'm hoping we get to see that.
Yeah.
I know they keep releasing more and more. I know here, I think it's tomorrow or maybe Saturday, Filoni is having a panel and they're showing some more of the unreleased art and stuff. I think it focuses on one of the clones.
Yeah, some of the ARC troopers.
You know, it seems like more and more we keep getting more tidbits, so that would be really cool to see that.
Yep.
It's tomorrow?
It's tomorrow.
Oh, okay, it's cool. Okay. Cool.
And then, is it today?
Today.
Oh, it's today then.
Well, none of us are going to be there because we don't know what
apparently, we're not making it to that because we haven't planned that, but...
Yeah,
okay. Very cool.
But there's also, like, one of the other big things of this week is the Season 2 premiere for Rebels.
Yes, Season 2 is going to be crazy.
Like, and is that Sunday?
Saturday.
It is going to be a day that ends in Y.
Right numbers, don't we?
We don't have any of the right numbers.
That's what we have the app for.
We made it to our panel, at least.
Yeah. Like, my obligations end in about 10 minutes, and I'm just going to wander around all weekend. But, like, that's, like, I'm excited about that because, I mean, obviously, this is the first time, like, Rebels is the first time that a Mandalorian has ever been, you know, a main character in anything. Like, a main, like, primary cast.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, we're going to go see this planet for a couple seasons and she'll be, you know, we'll have some Mandalorians there.
I'll put it this way.
Yeah.
Everyone here likes Mandalorians, obviously.
Yeah.
We're going to see more Mandos in Season 2.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
There you go.
There will be more, and it'll be great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I think there's, I know, like, when Sabine was announced and first came on screen, there was a little bit of debate, you know, between it, but I think she's grown on a lot of us already, and
definitely.
You're already seeing she's upgraded her armor. That was a lot of concern. Oh, Sabine doesn't have as much, she has new gauntlets, she has new leg flares and weaponry and stuff like that, so I think it's only going to get better for the Mandos.
Yeah.
I just feel bad for the costumers that are keep going, oh, there's more to add to this costume.
Yeah.
Yes.
Every single time.
I got it perfect. It's great.
The moment they get it right. Oh, no, one more thing to add.
Yeah, I should watch
and the app team. Like, well, you have
it's like what
app team and the brigade seems like, well, you have to keep
what episode were you going for?
Yeah. She's an interesting character. I think that's cool though. I think that's a little bit of an homage to us, you know. We always say we're never done building our kits. So it's just cool to see Sabine keep upgrading and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You falling apart there?
Yeah, I was wearing this on the way in. But,
it looks
like I said, never done. This is getting fixed in the hotel room tonight.
For those that can't see and are listening in, Ian's
I'm holding
right
up.
Thigh plate.
Yep. The snap that holds everything on just decided to give way, like, as I'm sitting here. And that's the thing. It's never while you're, like, running down a road trying to catch a bus to get to the...
Or stomping through a 5-foot snowbank.
Yeah, this guy, a couple weeks ago, we had a troop up in Maine, and that was back after one of, you know, many giant snowstorms that the East Coast had. And we had, like, a good 5-6 foot snowbank, and we just took all kinds of pictures.
Joe's shaking his head.
East Coast snow? What are you talking about?
You're from Florida. You shush. But like, yeah, like he rolled around in the snow for like a good 2 hours. He was soaked. Like we thought you lost a foot plate, but you found it.
I found it.
Yeah,
and I had to dig for it, but yep. I found it.
And I just like snapped it back on, stood inside, and all the kids like, because it was at a kids event with bounce houses and stuff. So we went back in, and a bunch of kids were like, "Why is that guy all wet?"
You could find me, just follow the puddle.
But like, yeah, it's always like I've just like that popped off while I'm sitting here in a chair, nice and comfy. And it's just like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many people are familiar, but the Mandalorian Mercs have a bit of a camaraderie tradition. We based it off the military of challenge coins, and I noticed Joe reaching for his pouch there. And the moment I say this, half of the Mandos in here are starting to dig for it, so I feel like maybe I shouldn't pull out my coin at this point, but I was thinking I might be able to get, I don't know, Bill?
Give me a minute.
If he's got a coin, maybe.
Everybody came prepared.
There we go.
It seems like everyone came prepared. Which, if they were thinking through, they would have waited for me to actually pull out my coin and challenge everyone.
Yep.
So fortunately, I've not owed everyone a drink. Did you just drop it?
Yeah.
You just challenged everyone in the room. So, who's got their coins?
I actually have one, first time that I've ever brought one anywhere.
There we go.
Nerds.
So, white and purple, Merc's Bash. We'll be getting some drinks from you, right?
Yep. Yeah, the Merc's Bash is tonight.
Merc's Bash is tonight.
Yep.
Yes.
For those that haven't picked up tickets, you can still get tickets at the door. And the food starts at 6, so come around 7. We can discuss details later, because those listening in probably don't care too much. Sorry, guys.
They're very sad.
So, yeah, but the convention calls it at 7?
Yeah,
the convention.
Yeah, the floor closes at...
All right, so I'll be here till 7, so that means I have to take some time to go home and take a shower.
There you go. Yeah. For those who aren't here, I just wanted to compliment Mandaglar and the other clans in the area for how well of a job they did on the booth setup here. I'm sure everyone will see pictures. For those listening at home, they did a really great job. It looks really nice.
Yep.
Tom did an amazing job on that speeder.
Yeah.
Speeder looks great. So the whole setup is really, really nice. I
still want to drive it.
Yeah, that's one of the things. For those that just see the photos, that speeder does drive.
Yep.
It was driven here from one of the places that everyone's staying at.
It was on a... Oh, okay. I was going to say, he didn't drive it from North Carolina.
He did not, he did not drive it across country.
That would have been a long trip.
That would have taken him a little longer, but it was hauled over in a trailer, and then he drove it from where the trailer was parked to the convention center, which turned a couple heads, and Dave Filoni took it for a ride as well. You got a picture?
We got to see that.
Yeah, you got to send me that. That needs to go up, like, today.
That might be where the scratches came from. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of fiberglass on that thing. It doesn't handle exceptionally well, but... What?
But it looks pretty.
What?
Check your time.
Yeah, if you haven't had a chance to stop by the bunker yet, definitely do. It's like made out to be like the inside of a Mandalorian dreadnought. We've got like a control station with all the appropriate switches and knobs and everything. The jail cells are a real treat. We've got 4 jail cells you can just walk in and out of, and if you take pictures of them while you use your flash, you get a lot of really neat little practical effects that go on there for each photo. So definitely check that out if you can.
Yeah, it's really great setup.
Yeah,
they did a lot of work on it. A lot of work.
Yep.
How's everyone enjoying the con?
Day one.
Day one only. Yeah.
Day one. We've all been here for like 3 hours, except for you.
Yeah,
I'm here longer.
I'm surprised you're even here, because usually you're like captain table jockey.
Yeah. So it's like once this is over, I gotta go back to the table to make sure it hasn't imploded. Yeah.
He's our original voice, and then he just rides the table the rest of the con.
Well, in armor.
At Celebration 6 down in Orlando, how many hours did you spend at the table? Because, I mean, obviously 4 days, because that's how long the whole thing was there.
I couldn't dress in my armor on Sunday because Jeff was driving our armor back.
Yep.
But I think 20-something hours.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that was one thing that happened too. I don't know how about you guys, how well your armor arrived the trip this time. Like mine, the armor ended up coming fine. The only thing that's broken like either here just now or in the hotel room. I was putting stuff on and stuff snaps off and whenever you hit a door, coincidentally.
Well, you're probably also building more for the cold than for the heat.
Mostly,
like I've done. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know at least one or two other Canadian Mandos, they've used hot glue in spots and it's just coming right off.
Yep. But in my case, my totes are what took the damage of the airline freight this time.
I know we did the last podcast was all about bringing your armor down to Celebration. We heard one of the mercs from Ohio, his armor bin was going up that loading ramp, and then right at the top, it took a dive right off.
He was in the
He was watching it the whole time. He got a photo of it. It just lying on the side there. Apparently, everything was fine, so he packed it well, but that's got to be scary.
I had some minor bending damage because TSA obviously tossed my bag during their check because there's a lot of steel in that. And they didn't pack it back in exactly the way that they pulled it out.
Right.
So, but luckily steel, so just bend it back into place.
I just had to, on the carousel where your luggage comes out, I've got a luggage strap around, it's like a Rubbermaid bin, nothing fancy, but it holds on my armor, packs it real well, and it counts as checked baggage, so it's cheap to fly with, especially coming down from Canada.
No, it's still not cheap.
it's not too bad. So I have the luggage strap around it to just keep the lid on, and it makes it easy for, if they want to inspect it, they can. There was no luggage strap when it came out the carousel, and it must have happened right as it came out, but I was on the far side. I didn't see it actually dump, but it went opening towards the ground and just spilled like half the armor right there. And I just see it come around and go, yep, that's mine. Fortunately, I didn't bring too many blasters. They were kind of towards the bottom, so they didn't spill out onto the main carousel.
Still running around screaming.
Yeah. That's one of the things is I've always, I do check to make sure everything's there. And fortunately, everything was there this time, too. But I always kind of take my stuff to the side to check rather than going, oh, let's just open this bin and have a whole bunch of blasters right on the top in the middle of an airport. Not the best idea.
No.
Yeah, mine, the armor survived, but the totes, sort of didn't.
Yeah.
The brand that we got... the totes themselves were okay, but they were ones that I specifically bought because they had wheels on them.
Right.
Both wheels are completely gone.
Oh, no.
One of the wheels on Amanda's is gone, just completely just off. The other one was sort of on, and then one of the clasps that actually holds the whole thing shut was just gone.
Oh, jeez.
I went the risky route. I actually packed mine in a shipping box. And then wrapped it all up. So I bubble wrapped everything hardcore and shrink wrapped a couple. I did ship my jetpack. I shipped my jetpack like a week ago.
That's something I would be scared to take on a plane.
Yeah, I shipped it like a week ago. So, but everything else went in a shipping box and.
And you took your helmet.
Orange taped. Oh yeah, my helmet was my carry on.
Yeah.
Put the Marisun
right in the front
plane
of under the seat.
Letting it out of my sight.
That's the best way to do it.
Yep. So.
Yeah, I love my helmet. Like, the one I brought this time is a modified Django two-piece, one of the lightest, cheapest helmets that we have. I love them because they're so light.
Yeah.
But they are, as a result, slightly more fragile. So I had the whole thing just cradled in a little, motorcycle bag on my lap for most of the flight.
Yeah. Oh, they didn't tell you to stow it by your feet?
They did.
and you said no?
It's there it is. Okay, back here.
My helmet.
Safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's safe.
My helmet just barely fits under the seat, and I'm pretty sure that little test thing they have outside the gate before you board.
Yeah,
I guarantee my helmet will not fit in that thing.
Mine didn't. And I just was like, we're gonna act like we didn't see that.
But you don't, that as long as they don't ask you to check, and I've never heard of them checking that. As long as it, when you're on the plane, it does fit, that you're good.
Yeah,
I heard a couple of our guys from UK or places like that where they're coming overseas.
Yeah.
We're a little worried about it just because for international flights, they're gonna be out so long that they tend to check them a little more closely.
They're a little more picky.
So I heard a couple of guys like Niabi and them, they ended up putting theirs in their bins and stuff like that. But
Well, Niabi actually constructed a case for his helmet to ensure that it made it safe and sound.
There you go.
It's not a fun thing when your helmet busts.
No. Well, it's just such a centerpiece for the costume.
And especially when it happens at a convention, And Chris will know what I'm talking about. Chris is sitting back in the audience there. 2 years ago, Phoenix Comic Con, I dropped my helmet. It is the worst feeling, and time does slow down. And just for those listening, it's one of the assassin helmets. So there's barely any material because of those side slits. And it went face first into the ground. The entire front came off. And I looked like one of those AT-AT drivers. Worst feeling. So I was helmetless on Sunday, and that's one of the nice things, at least. Unlike a stormtrooper, if you bust your helmet, what are you doing? Unless you're looking like Luke Skywalker or Han Solo.
Yeah.
Helmetless, it's weird. Yeah. With the Mandos, we are our characters. You know, so going without a helmet, no problem. You're still kicking yourself in mentally the whole time because you dropped it, but...
Yeah, I dropped my DSB Merc at a comic book shop. They were doing a costume contest for like a halfway to Halloween thing.
Yeah.
And it's a resin helmet, so it's a little much sturdier than this one. But I still dropped it. It fell about 5 feet off of, a rack of comic books, just right onto the back, and it just split like right up one of the back panels.
Yikes.
So it was like good enough to like sort of wear for photos, but it was basically just like the visor keeping everything from just... splitting open. So like brought it home and just like riveted a steel plate over the back of it.
That wasn't the first time it fell.
No, that was the thing. Like that helmet has been dropped so many times before and since. Once by him, plenty of times by me. Because like especially if you're like trying to like get at your phone or a trading card to give to somebody and you're like juggling your helmet and your blaster and all that sort of stuff, something's going
on. Or you've just met a celebrity like John Morton and you're going, oh my God, it's John Morton, I need his autograph, and you're trying to, grab for that phone or the photo or whatnot.
Now I look like an idiot.
Yep.
But the reality is at some point it's going to get damaged, and with the Mercs at least, for the most part, everyone's got battle damage to some extent. It adds character.
Oh yeah.
There's metal rods on the inside on mine and fiberglass patches. And fortunately, I had one of the local Mercs help me out with that. And so the Monday after the con was over, we fixed it up in the morning and then went out and got some really cool photos because that's the only place I'd ever gotten photos with the Arizona climate and all the geography and whatnot.
Yep.
So it made for some really cool photos. Definitely need to go back there at some point. That's a fun one.
Yeah, Maine in Canada, it's very, you're either next to like snowbanks like 3 days after the storm when they're all brown and gross.
The big problem is all the sand, you just end up with like dirt piles in the middle of winter.
It's so coarse and rough and it gets everywhere.
Yeah. Sand. I hate sand. I don't know. Bill, you said, was rolling around in the snow. You guys have had photos of the snow.
It was fun.
Oh, yeah. We had enough snow happen up in the Northeast this time that it almost never got to that stage. Like, they would plow it out of the way, and then it would snow again. So the sand never had a chance to really get into anything.
Oh, okay.
Like, we got some great pictures of us in our backyard. Normally, it's, like, full of my landlord's, like, kids' play sets and stuff. But it was snowing enough, it didn't matter. Because, visibility was gone 5 feet away anyway, so it looked really cool.
Nice. For reference, Joe, snow is the water that's frozen that falls from the sky. I know you guys don't get that much in Florida.
You ever had shaved ice?
What it is.
Yeah.
It's shaved ice, but it falls from the sky, Joe.
Snow, desert, I don't know any of these things. Beach and hotness, that's all I know. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the funny thing is,
you don't want to eat it, though.
You see them do their snow photos, you see, like, the Arizona guys out in the desert doing theirs. And we've set up a couple beach shoots, and they've all gotten rained out.
Oh, no.
Florida, if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yep. I actually understand completely, though. I have never gotten snow photos in the 5 years I've had my Mando, and I'm up in Canada.
Yeah. That does make sense.
It's just, it gets so cold that...
it's the exact opposite. Like, you
get very little snow.
Yeah, and hot glue is one of those great materials because it's quick and it bonds to almost everything. But only in a range of like 20, 30 degrees.
Yeah.
It gets too hot, it melts up again. Gets too cold, it just snaps.
Yeah.
So
very much I've got a couple friends that it's like, all right, next time it's good weather, everyone's free, we're going to run or drive quickly to wherever a good location is because you get the good weather with nice snow falling, you've got maybe an hour tops to get to your location, take that shoot, and then get back.
Yep.
Yeah, we have the problem that we're, it's like all like 2 hours away from each other.
Yeah, yeah. That's our big issue in Maine. We have a fair number of members up where we are, but you know, there's like two of us up here, two of us down there. One's all the way down almost in Massachusetts. He troops with them more than he troops with us.
Yeah.
And that's one of the cool things though, is you just trooping with all the different people. You know, if you end up going to conventions, it's like you're with family the moment you get there.
And that's why I like to come to these, because like,
yeah,
I
mean, this is just a giant family get together.
Yeah, and then there's you guys. Like any every, given event,
every event,
there's
a family.
There's 20 of us. Yeah.
yeah. No, it's we have a good time.
Yep.
There's a lot of us who are pretty spread out because luckily we've managed to keep all of Florida together as one giant clan. So there are some of us who are like 9 hours apart. So we only get to see each other once in a while. But yeah, we do get lucky that we have a lot of members at most events. We just had our big con last weekend, so I'm wiped.
Yeah, you were really giving it.
Oh yeah.
You got MegaCon, which I attended the previous year. That was a lot of fun. So if you make it down to MegaCon in Florida, that's a great fun one, and there's plenty of mercs.
Oh yeah.
To be hanging out with, and then yeah, you were what, cross country the whole way, so.
Yep.
Coast to coast on that one.
Yep, 2 days rest and come to Celebration. That's all right. I call MegaCon my job.
Yeah.
Celebration is just my vacation.
Yeah. I still like how you're trying to convince me to fly from Canada down to one coast and then fly right to the other coast.
Just make a big U.S. try.
There's this thing called money, Joe. I don't have enough Republic credits.
I offered my floor.
All right, I think that's...
We're running out of time here.
Yeah, so. That's about all we got. So on behalf of myself, our awesome guest John Morton, Tal down on the end, Thaxos, Solus Ram, I'd like to thank you, all of you guys, for coming. If anyone is actually listening to this on the internet, thank you too. But thank you all for coming, and have a great celebration.
Yes. Thank you, all of you.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.